September hits, I think that's when the basic girl.
Pretty good. Now, when does pumpkin spice season end?
I'm not a pumpkin spice person anymore. I used to be.
What about peppermint?
I'm still not. I like coffee black, like my soul. Like, I don't like do any of the fancy stuff.
Like
anymore.
Your heart?
We were just talking about our coffees, though, man. I'm telling you.
The salt thing?
The butter salt? And salt is so good. And maple syrup. Yeah. I mean, I just like it. Oh, yeah. Are we going right now?
Yep. Oh,
are we
live? Yeah.
Oh,
but yeah, I really want to try the butter salt thing.
Butter salt is pretty good.
I've done butter, but I've never added salt to my coffee.
It gives it just a little different zing, you know?
Like, are we talking like sea salt type
thing?
I do five
twists of the salt grinder. Maybe six or seven if I'm feeling spicy.
All right. I'm going to try it tomorrow.
I picked up on that in Alaska. Those guys do that. Huh. So the times I've hunted Kodiak from the boat, they were doing that. Butter, salt,
and
syrup, same thing.
Isn't like salt like hydrates you too, right? So it's like you're kind of dehydrating yourself with the caffeine, but then you're throwing a little salt in there. Maybe it evens out. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Yeah, I've been big and trying to add more salt lately in my stuff, like running all the time and working out. And obviously on the mountain, just adding more and more salt.
Yeah.
People always complain all day back in like, oh, like Mountain House has way too much salt and all that. It's like, you need that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you need that much.
Probably there's a line.
Yeah, maybe.
Depending, like, if you're just, you know, weeks in the elk woods, you take everything you can get.
Yeah, for sure.
Start eating your boot leather after a while.
That's right.
To get that extra salt.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
We're stoked to have you in Vegas.
Yeah, what a treat.
I didn't realize what a snowboarder fan I was, as I've become since the last few days. As reading up on you and watching some of the stuff you've done, you're a pretty gnarly dude.
Oh, man, thank you. I appreciate that. But it's just the same as you, you know.
I don't think it is.
No, but it is, though, because it really is what you put your what you dedicate your life to and your time, really. What you dedicate your time to, right? You get good at, and I've been snowboarding my whole life, and I don't know, just, like, did it. And you just progress, and you push yourself, and you know, I'm pretty like hard on myself, so it like forces you to like get better and do better, and people think that it's crazy to snowboard. I got like friends or a family in Louisiana, and they literally think I am a psycho. They're like, did you just like, how did you make it down there? And I'm like, yeah, I just close my eyes and just hope for the best, you know. But it's calculated risk, you know. You spend enough time looking at mountains, figure out how to ride, make your way down.
Yeah.
Is there still a snowboarder versus ski? Like, beef?
Oh, there's
between?
Some beef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a skier. That's why.
Buddy.
Oh, man.
Oh, but you should sit. You should trade places.
It's been fun, Brady.
I miss the days. I used to live in Montana right next to Glacier National Park. So our mountain was Big Mountain there in Whitefish.
Yep.
And season pass every year. And I badly miss those days of just being a ski every single day.
Yeah. It's awesome. And there really is no beef.
It's always a fun thing.
It's like skating or rollerblading. Ooh, you know,
that's real beef, though.
Fly fishing or gear fisherman. You know, it's like, there really isn't, but we're all out there just enjoying this.
Yeah,
the mountains.
Enjoying it.
Yeah.
I was curious. Do you ever get asked what you do for a living?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Like somebody, you just run in, you meet somebody else, like, oh, what do you do?
Oh, I mean, that's like a very common question, right? You know, and a lot of times I'll just make stuff up, just random, just like, and then they'll be like, really? And I'll be like, no, I'm actually like I snowboard for a living. And they're like, oh, you're really an instructor. And I'm like, nah. Really?
How do you explain? What do you tell them?
I mean, typically I just say, yeah, I just say I snowboard for a living. And sometimes they say cool and they leave it at that. And I'm like, perfect. Because I don't like being the center of attention, which is kind of ironic, but I don't really like that. And so, but then if they ask further, they're like, so what do you mean? And I'll be like, well, I'm a professional snowboarder. And,
yeah.
You know, so like, what does that look like? Well, I got sponsors and I just pretty much just get to snowboard and people film me doing it. Really? That's pretty much it. I used to do contests and stuff, but I left those a long time ago.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in California, Mammoth Lakes.
Okay. Northern California?
Central, like on the east side of the Sierras.
Okay.
Awesome place to grow up. You have?
Mm-hmm.
Golly, man. It is beautiful.
Place.
High Sierra, hot springs everywhere. It was the best place to grow up ever. Yeah. And I I have a house there, and I thought I would never really leave. And then I just was kind of ready for a change. And typically, the snowboarding that I like to do is on the West Coast, so it's typically like Northwest Washington up into British Columbia and Alaska. And I kind of just found myself like leaving California in January and not coming home until May, and I was like, this sucks. And so I ended up moving up to Bellingham, Washington, and just having a home base there. And it's so easy to just like rip up to Whistler and hit a storm cycle and then come home, reset, and travel from there. So, and now I really do like it in Washington. I like most things about it. There's a lot of things I don't like. I like the land and the just the climate is so nice there. It's like pretty mild. And I don't mind the rain, you know, good rain brings the snow and the fish. And
yeah, it's so green. It's, I kind of like the vibe. I mean, it gets a bad rap, I think, more recently just because of some social social issues going on.
But
for the most part, anytime I've ever been up there, like, I really like the vibe of the Northwest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, Seattle, Portland, it's like, it's cool. It's cool, Phil. I like the rain, too.
I mean, I try to stay as far away from Seattle and Portland as possible. But just, like, in general, the landscape is just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, we live in an excellent waterfowl flyway. That's kind of what got me into hunting. Mm-hmm. And that was my introduction to it. And I've really felt like I've learned a lot and dialed a lot in around home, which is nice. Like, I can literally drive 15 minutes from my house and I'm duck hunting.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome. Cool. You know? And fishing too. Like, I got a couple cool rivers nearby where I really like to steelhead fish, and then obviously the snowboarding is there. So yeah, it's a good place.
Did you grow up kind of like that, like roaming, venturing out? I mean, was this
So I grew up just outside of Mammoth in a small town called Crowley. It was like population of 500 people.
Yeah.
We have one gas station. The house that I grew up in there was two creeks that kind of surrounded it, and they had just awesome trout in it. Small little trout. And my brother, well, my sister too, but my brother and I were homeschooled. We were closer in age, and man, we'd just like go fishing. You know, we'd do some school in the morning, and then we'd just go out and go fishing.
Great childhood.
It was the best. We had forts everywhere, like no neighbors. Like it was awesome. And yeah, honestly, it was the best childhood ever. I would not trade it for anything. And yeah, I learned how to just fish, and that was first. Those some of my earliest memories are for fishing. You know, so just kind of grew up in the outdoors, roaming around in forts, and like we you know, in our teenage years we caused some havoc for sure. and it was a small town, so we would like have these depots with all our friends where we would like throw snowballs at cars and stuff like that, and they'd like escape routes, and in the summertime we would do these things called road tricks where we would
we used to pull delineator posts out. You'd go at night, you'd take them, shake them, pull them out, and then you'd fly down the highway. Small town too. I mean, probably like 200 people, maybe. We had a gas station.
Yeah.
Sounds very similar to my upbringing, but
it's the best.
We would have one guy sit in the passenger side window, and he'd take that delineator post like a javelin, and we'd like try to, you know, lob it through signs and things.
Dude, we used to do the same thing with cones.
Yeah.
So we call it coning.
Yeah.
So you get one of the big construction cones.
Yeah.
And it was hard to hit the sign going fast enough, because if you hit it good enough, the sign would topple.
Oh, yeah. Delineator post would go right through like a javelin, because you'd be doing 70 miles an hour and you just kind of lob that thing out there.
Man. That's just, I mean,
small town living.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just some good, clean fun.
It is right there. Every kid should have that experience.
The thing that stopped us from doing that is I remember sitting on the passenger side and I kind of lobbed one and it caught kind of the air current and it ended up throwing that thing like right down in front of the car. And we almost just like, you know, T-boned it, ran it up into the engine. So I thought that was probably the end of that. But
yeah, I think what stopped, well, didn't really stop, but put a halt to Ours was I got arrested.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Not really. We were on top of the shopping center in town, and we were just like literally just dropping snowballs on cars, just like my brother and the cops came up. We didn't get arrested, but they took us into the police station, called our parents. And we got in trouble with the parents.
I don't think that stuff happens.
I don't think so either.
Like we had a kid that I went to high school with. He snuck in on Halloween to the fire station and was siphoning gas out of the fire engine, and didn't want to throw the lights on in the firehouse because he didn't want people from the outside to see there's anybody in there. So one of the kids decided to light a match or a lighter to see how full the bucket was, and it blew up and caught the whole fire station on fire.
Wow!
And yeah, it got pretty gnarly. But
is he okay?
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing now, but
probably not doing that.
Probably not that, but it seemed like when I was growing up, that kind of stuff happened all the time. Just random weirdness.
Yeah, being a kid, man. Being a kid is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I've got three kids, and I know that, at least I think, they're not doing that kind of thing. I haven't had any cops show up to my house. So.
I just think it's different with phones, honestly.
For sure.
Everything's recorded.
Documented. Oh, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. It was way easier to get away with things back in the day. everything's recorded. But yeah, just things like, we didn't have phones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wasn't it great?
And so it was awesome.
Yeah.
And you just were forced to play outside with your friends. And like, mm-hmm. I skateboarded a bunch and like, I had a GoPed. You remember GoPeds?
Oh, mm-hmm. GoPeds.
Little gas powered scooters. Yeah. I had one of those. It was awesome. It was basically like a lawnmower engine on a scooter.
Yeah.
It was just fun, man. He'd like take that to my friend's house. I was, 11, 12 mm-hmm. years old.
Learning so many life lessons that, kids probably don't get to learn these days because they can't be outside and doing like bad stuff.
Yeah, snowballs at cars, man. That one was fun.
You did some skateboarding as a kid?
Yeah.
So if you follow Jeff Rowley?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit? Venture into hunting?
Yeah, absolutely.
That guy was like a god to me.
Oh, same.
As a youth. And he got into hunting, and then we got connected from like Lorenzo's brother. I kind of knew him, and we ended up exchanging text messages. And I went home that night, and I was telling my wife, I was like, this is like the most incredible thing that ever happened to me in my whole life. I'm like, I'm texting Jeff Rowley.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe it. My mind was so blown, but it was just really cool to see like two worlds of something that seemed to be like quite, different, hunting. And he got into hunting, and I was like, oh, that thing that I do hunting, like he's into it. And it just, man, that felt so cool.
Man, it is really cool. I've never met him personally, but a good friend, Andy Mokel, flip-flop guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's good friends with Jeff. And, I was like, because I didn't get an archery elk in Montana this year, and I was going to maybe go back and hunt rifle with my buddy Andy. And he was like, oh, dude, like, let me hit up Jeff and see if he wants to come too. And I'm like, that would have been rad.
Wouldn't it?
And I just got busy, and I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't go back out, but maybe it'd be really cool to do.
Yeah,
like, that could be a cool project.
Yeah, a combo. Huh?
I think that's gotta happen.
I want in on that.
Hey,
y'all get that going.
Jeff, if you listen to this, let's do this.
I'll just walk around asking him questions all the time. But yeah, I follow that guy just like religious, like a religion.
I was at that age. Any time a new skate or snow video would come out, you'd get him on VHS. You'd go to the local shops and. As a kid, that was everything, right? You'd get videos, magazines, and stickers. Stickers were like currency.
Yep.
And as childhood, that's like kind of what you look forward to.
Mm-hmm. When did you start snowboarding?
I think I strapped on a snowboard for the first time when I was 9. It was my brother's board, and just in our backyard, we had a little hill. And like, I didn't tell him or anything. My brother's like 4 years older than me. He's like my hero. Anything that he does, I want to do, right?
Yeah.
So like, he got a skateboard, I got a skateboard, surfboard, whatever it is. Like, I wanted to do what he's doing. And so I just like took a snowboard and strapped it on with some Sorels and just rode down the little hill. And I was like, this is so cool. And then I like told, I was so excited about it. I like came in and I told him. And he was chill about it, but he wasn't like mad I took his snowboard. But then I got I don't even remember. It was a super old, like beat up Burton snowboard for Christmas that year. It was from like a thrift store.
Yeah.
And that was it. So yeah, 9 and then just pretty much like my brother was really the influence, right? And so he's also a professional snowboarder. He's really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know either.
Yep. And so, really just following in his footsteps, he got a sponsor. I remember it was Fresh Jive was his first, like, first sponsor.
What is that?
It was,
is it a board company?
No, it was like, I think it was like clothes.
Oh, okay.
And this is a funny story, actually. My mom, so he got like this package in the mail and she's like, oh, Fresh Drive, like, cool. And then like, she started looking into it and they basically had like some very inappropriate
yeah, of course.
Ads in magazines. And my mom was like, nope, just axed that from the very beginning, you know? But it wasn't about that. It was just about like this free gear. It was like the coolest thing in the world to like see a package show up with like a t-shirt in it. Mm-hmm. It was the coolest thing ever. And so like, yeah, my brother was, you know, on that path. And so I was like, well, that's what I want to do too. So yeah. that was pretty much the path I was on.
Were you going somewhere local to snowboard? Is there a resort nearby?
Yeah, Mammoth.
Mammoth. Yeah, okay, Mammoth. How far was that?
From where I live, probably like to the resort, like 25, 30 minutes maybe.
So did you get like season pass? How many?
Yeah,
how often were you going?
Well, let's see here. I did not grow up with a lot of money at all. And the only way that I was able to snowboard is I went to like, I went to this little Christian school, Crowley Christian. So it was like Crowley Lake and Mammoth. And I went to like for a couple of years, like elementary school, I went to this school and they gave a student pass. Mm. So it was, you get the student pass and it was $3 tickets. And it was this guy, Dave McCoy, who was basically the founder of Mammoth, the resort there. Mm-hmm. And he was just all about the kids. And that was the only reason that I was able to snowboard. It was crazy, honestly. Gotcha. And then, you know, and then I got on like the Mammoth Mountain snowboard team. And, you know, that opened up some doors and then you start getting sponsors. And then like my parents were like, oh, this is like,
yeah,
this is something, you know? And so they like fully supported it, homeschooled us, like pretty much from there on out because we were just traveling and doing contests and stuff. And so, yeah, that was pretty much like the only reason why I was able to like afford to snowboard.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Isn't it funny, like, as you go along life, just like the little things that fall in place that kind of help you with your direction and your path. And it's like those little, sometimes just like tender mercies that help carve you out, you know?
Yeah. Crossroads, tender mercies. I like that. That's nice.
Yeah. It's kind of gnarly how it goes sometimes. Yeah, it's like you can't predict it or pick it. It just finds you.
It could have gone the other way just as easily too, you know? It's
like, what'd your parents do? Like, here's the thing. I got three kids. I don't know. Do you have kids?
I don't.
No, no kids. So I got three boys. But they were fully supportive. They weren't like, hey, you need to, you know, go to college and be a doctor or a lawyer.
I have the best parents. They're so awesome. So supportive. And I don't think that marriage was always easy for them and they just stuck it out, you know, mainly I think for the kids. And it's actually like, it's beautiful. Now they're like in love, you know, and then like they have a great relationship now, but like, it seems like we have, you know, they had four kids and it seemed like super
they're like,
hard.
Oh, remember why we got married.
Yeah. And so my dad is from Louisiana and, he just always had like a restaurant. He was always a chef. So he had his own restaurant. So the house we grew up in, we were renting this house and then he owned this, property right next to us. And he's had a restaurant there, but it's in like a tiny little town, you know? And I think it was like, restaurant business is hard in general.
It's for sure.
And so my mom worked in the restaurant as well. And so, yeah, I like just grew up in a restaurant. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You ate real good food.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
And it was all Cajun, like blackened catfish. And
this is awesome.
Crawfish etouffee and all the classic Cajun gumbos and stuff. And yeah, but just some unfortunate events, man. Like he ended up selling the restaurant. Like right, like a year before just a real estate boom, like like it was super cheap there. And then Mammoth just blew up and it's like, it's so expensive now, but it really blew up. And I think that, if that timing was a little different, maybe not, who knows, but like, yeah, if that timing was a little bit different, maybe it would have set him up a little bit better. But, you know, we always had food and always had clothes and a roof over our head. We weren't in like poverty or anything, but we definitely didn't grow up with any money. And I think that my parents saw that like this was something, like snowboarding was something, right? It was kind of the heyday where, or like maybe, I think it actually had been the heyday for a while and I was kind of just coming into it, but it was like, yeah, it was the golden days, man. There was a lot of money flowing around and snowboarding was just cool. And yeah, I think that, you know, I got my first paycheck when I was 14 and so, like,
from
and
just, snowboarding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, just like all the free gear, all the free clothes. My parents weren't buying us clothes or anything. Shoes, you name it. I had a shop sponsor. I'd go get skateboards and surfboards. And it was like, it was crazy, man. And so they fully supported us in that. And yeah. it's actually really cool. You know, like my brother and I have been able to help them later in life, which is like,
that's cool.
Which is an honor, you know?
I just think it's cool. It's always hard to know what to do as a parent. Like I know myself, you have your kids get interested in things and you're like,
yeah,
could this be a thing? I mean, I don't know. I admire, I guess, your parents to just say, yeah, go for it. Let's do it. Let's support you in like your dream and what you want to do.
Yeah. Like I'm so thankful for that.
It's really cool.
And I actually dropped out of high school.
Oh, really?
Oh, dang. I did. Dropped out of homeschool.
Gotcha.
And my mom was kind of just like, cause she was like the teacher. Right. And like, basically how it happened is my senior year. And I was like filming at this point. Right. Yeah. I was like going and working on these projects with film companies. And she just like loaded me up with basically my schoolwork for the year. And I just bailed and was traveling around and, man, I just stopped doing it, man.
That's kind of a unique path. You hear people dropping out of high school. It's like, okay, public school or private, but you dropped out of homeschool. Like, how did that discussion come about? Is it like, oh, I'm just not going. I'm not going. Don't see him.
But honestly, though, like, I don't. Whatever, it worked out.
That's gonna be my question: is what would be your advice to somebody?
No, don't, dude. You're already going through school. Mm-hmm. Like, you're doing it. Like, that is something that I regret. Because, or not even regret, whatever. I just like, I feel like I've had, I'm very, very structured in certain areas of my life, but then I'm also extremely unstructured in others. And I feel like that, you know, that deadline of your paper, your test that you have to get in and do this book report on this and that, you know, like I had some of that. But I was traveling so much. School's in the wintertime, right? Snowboarding's in the wintertime. So I was just traveling and it was really hard for me and just my brain's kind of messed up. It's in so many different directions and all the time. And so, I feel like if I would have put more just effort into school, I would have maybe a little bit more structure in my life now. But I just was like, I didn't care about school. I was like, school is stupid. Like, I know what I'm doing. I'm snowboarding. This is what I'm doing. I'm putting all of my energy, literally everything I had, into snowboarding. And that's what I did. And it worked out. But it very easily, like, could have gone the other way. Like, I've had plenty of ups and downs with injuries. And there was a time where I thought I was done, honestly, snowboarding. I was probably, like, 21-ish, early, 22.
God, so young.
And I had been hurt for a couple of years. I was sponsored by Nike at the time. And they basically were telling, I mean, it's kind of a long story, but yeah, they basically said, like, you need to be better. You need to snowboard better. And I'd been hurt for a couple of years, and so I wasn't producing how I wanted to.
God, that sucks to hear, I bet.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, especially young. You don't know who you are.
Yeah,
you know,
21, all
your entire
kid.
Identity is snowboarding. Yeah. Like, literally, that
all,
is
all
like,
you know.
Yeah, that is it. And so I ended up, that was actually the first year I ever grew a beard. I ended up like.
Did it look that good?
It looked pretty good.
That's all we need to hear.
It was crazy because I didn't know, right? I had no idea. I was like, I'm hairy, dude. I don't know. I moved to Whistler, British Columbia, and I just rented this like shitty cabin, like this A-frame cabin with like a terrible like ant infestation. I was sleeping on the floor on an air mattress, and I just lived there all winter long. And I was like, dude, I'm just snowboarding. I'm not going to think about anything. I'm just growing a beard. And that in the middle of that season, I got the call from Nike saying that they were firing me. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. I'm like having the best year like of my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And, pretty much what we ended up doing was like making like a sponsor me tape, like what you do when you're like first kind of coming yep. up. And so we basically like took all the footage that I had that year and sent it to them. And I was like, dude, I'm having like a pretty good year, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, like we'll give you a 6-month contract. And they did. And then I ended up like winning some awards that year. And, mm-hmm. and that changed like kind of the whole trajectory of my snowboard career. But it was kind of like hanging in the balance a little bit at that point.
When you're saying that like you're having a pretty good year, like what in terms of that, does that mean like really good film side of things?
Yeah. Like, so basically like, yeah, for the audience who doesn't know, like basically what I do is I just go out and snowboard and people film me. Yeah. It's kind of like making an elk film or a hunting film. I mean, essentially it is. Uh-huh. But snowboarding, you like you have certain tricks, right? Like, you have, different tricks you want to do, different lines you want to ride. When I mean lines, like you just look at a mountain and you just like ride down mm-hmm. however you see fit. Right. And it takes a lot of, learning, judging how big that cliff is that you're going to jump off or like how flat is that landing, you know, or like, am I going to die if I go over this, if I make a wrong turn here? Cause there's a lot of that, right? Like
a lot of creativity too, probably.
Yeah. Then that's the lines. And that's the coolest part about it too, right? Is it's like, the way that I look at a mountain could be completely different than you would look at a mountain, right? Mm-hmm. And you might ride it completely different than I would ride it. And that's the beauty of just backcountry snowboarding. So that's really what it is. It's super simple. Yeah, I just get to go out and snowboard. I want to push myself. Like I want to like be the best that I can be. And I actually set a goal for myself that year. I was like, I want to win. I didn't even say it was just nominated. I wanted it to be nominated for Rider of the Year and Video Part of the Year. Cause my brother had won it the last 2 years.
Oh wow.
And I was like, that's like what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I got nominated. I won Video Part of the Year. And that was, yeah, that was kind of like, and then I actually quit Nike. I
was like, on your terms.
Yeah, I did. My 6-month contract was up, and I was like, dude, you guys, yeah. I mean, no, I'm friends with all those guys, and like Nike was awesome. Like the resources were so incredible. Yeah. Like when I was hurt, like I just moved to Portland and like had an own personal trainer. Like Nike was so good to me. Mm-hmm. But that was just like, I just didn't really. Liked the way that went down. And I just didn't really feel like they believed in me anymore. And I had an opportunity to go to Adidas actually. And then, so I went to Adidas and then like the next year, Nike quit their whole snowboard program.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I was like,
worked out.
It was a pretty good move.
smart, forward thinking on
that. Yeah, worked out. Dude, a lot of this is like, I hear you talking like pretty ballsy, man.
Ballsy?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
I mean, just like to take a 22-year-old to just be like, you know what? I'm gonna be a snowboarder. That's what I'm gonna do.
All I knew though, like it didn't feel ballsy at all. It just felt like
it probably didn't then. But looking back on it, can you appreciate the fact that you took a risk?
That's literally all I knew. That was the only risk I had to take.
Yeah.
Like no education on higher education other than a high school dropout. Like literally nothing. I liked fishing a lot. I was like, maybe I'll be a fishing guide or something like that. Yeah, I guess.
Just think those kinds of people. I mean, I would put you in that category. They make, to me anyway, outside looking in, it's some of the most fascinating people that I've known or I've met, or people like you that have been like, I'm gonna do this thing, and they've stuck with it, and they've stuck with the resolve, and like they've genuinely gone into it. And I just it's super. I admire it a lot. I think it's rad.
Thanks for saying that. That's cool. I never really looked at it like that. I just. Yeah, I don't know. I love it. That's really like what it all stems from.
You'd have to, right?
Like, I love it. It is so fun.
Do you still love it?
I do, man.
What do you love about it?
I'm not ready for it to be over. and it's, you know, there's a lifespan to it for sure. I think there's two parts to it. What I love about it is just what it's given me. Right. It's given me so much perspective on life, getting to travel to so many different cultures and meet cool people. Mm-hmm. And, and just eat good food and just like learn how to do life. Like, man, I went to my first international trip was to, I think it was to Canada. I was like 14 or 15. And then the next year I went to Japan and Finland, and I'm just a kid, dude. My parents were just like, I just went with my team manager, you know? So not a lot. I feel like I learned a lot about just how life works and the world works at a pretty early age. Mm-hmm. And I'm really thankful for that. Cause you don't really get that if you just go to school and you get to go on vacation with your family, once a year, if you're lucky or whatever, you know? And so it's just taught me a lot. It's taught me a lot about life. It's taught me a lot about just work ethic, right? Like what I was saying is like, I don't have structure in some areas of my life. I have really good structure when it comes to snowboarding. Like I do yoga every morning. I have like a half hour routine. I'm up.
Can you touch your toes?
You kidding me?
We were just talking about that.
Oh, wow. Come on, dude. Damn. Do a downward dog right here?
We were just talking about it. That's my New Year's resolution is to be able to touch my toes.
I can't touch my ankles. I can't touch my shins.
We don't stretch. Not stretching.
What?
Yeah, man.
Come on. It's so good for you.
I know.
You got to just move your body. That's the thing is it's like snowboarding is extremely hard on your body. Like you got to think you're strapped to a piece of wood, basically. That is a very, and you're like moving, it's a very unnatural, like like skiing is way more natural because you're like facing forward and your knees can bend like how they're supposed to. Snowboarding is it's pretty unnatural movement. So yeah, I have to stretch and I'm pretty into the gym and that's just something you got to do. So yeah, I'm pretty it taught me a lot of how to be structured, at least in like some areas of my life. Right? Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned yoga, that you do it every day. Because
no, I don't do it every day. I snowboard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I moved to Idaho for a winter. Yeah. I was in fisheries work.
Oh, cool. And, I'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, it was right next to, big ski resort. So I would say I'd been skiing in Montana most of my life and then living in Idaho. And so I picked up yoga.
Yeah.
Basically for the recovery aspect, because I was skiing every single day.
Dude, you have to.
And it was actually phenomenal because then, when I crash or fall or whatever, I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm nimble. I can move around.
That's right.
I probably could touch my toes then. But it was great for that aspect, like being on the mountain every single day skiing. Yeah. And
I mean,
I enjoyed it. I actually sweated more doing yoga than during my workout afterwards.
Really?
I was like, dang, all these chicks are in here and they're just like crushing this workout and I'm just dying.
Yeah. That's always fun.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing with snowboarding is like, it doesn't matter how good you are. It is inevitable that you're going to slam.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And there can be violent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
And so being strong is basically injury prevention. It was always kind of like my motive, because you're young and you're like, whatever. It's like, I was like, I can do this. But like, it's more when I would get hurt, I would be like, man, I need to be strong. So like when I do take this slam, like I got some injury prevention here. And then you're just, I mean, when you get a sunny stretch, because the thing is, when you're filming, it's all about weather, right? And you can film in the storm. If snow levels are low enough, we'll ride in the storm and we ride what we call pillows. So just like those, they're basically just like giant boulder stacks, that have these pillows on them and you ride them. They're super fun, technical and hard to ride. But typically, the real stuff doesn't come out until it's sunny, right? Because you're in the Alpine and you can't see if you don't have light. So the whole thing is you're just watching weather. And it's a storm will come in and it looks like there'll be some high pressure. And, that sunny cycle could be, 2 days. It could be a week. Right. And you don't, there's no days off. It's like you have a very limited amount of time in the winter to get those days. Like if you actually if I calculated the amount of days that I snowboard all winter long, but if you calculated the actual amount of days that you filmed where footage actually made it in the film or the edit or whatever, it's very minimal.
Yeah.
And most of them come from one day, where you'll have one day and you'll get three or four shots,
So you got to capitalize on it when the weather
hits. Yeah, exactly. And so that's the point where you're like, you're just wrecked and you're like, yeah, you just got to stretch. Like you get back super late, especially the spring days when it's, the days are long. you're back. I mean, it's dark to dark days, mm-hmm. you know, and,
yeah, I will say one of the sorest times I've ever been is the time I went snowboarding. Nice. I mean, my whole body hurt. I was like, holy yeah. mother of pearl. What is yeah. this? This is a different kind of soreness. Yeah.
It's real, man.
I use muscles that I didn't even know they existed. Yeah. Hurt, man. Everything hurt.
Yeah.
What's your favorite kind of riding to do?
Alaska. Big mountains in Alaska.
And like, are you talking?
Just riding lines.
Just lines?
Yeah, lines.
Like big open ground? Do you like running chutes? I mean,
I like it all.
Really?
Yeah. Typically I don't like just riding like a big, just like boring.
Yeah.
Like,
blank face.
Yeah. I mean, that's not really that fun. I'm looking for, unique features. Like you're looking for lines, like especially in Alaska, do you know what slough is? Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, you gotta like ride and account for your slough because you're going to start from like right and go to left, you know, and work your way that way, or else if you cut back in, your slough's going to get you and you're going to fall.
Yep.
And so you basically are like looking at lines basically in that light. You're like, you're moving from one direction to the other and you're looking for like waves to slash or cliffs to jump off. Like my favorite is when you find just like natural like wind lips, mm-hmm. and there's a lot more takeoffs than there are landings, you know, there'll yeah. be like takeoffs everywhere. But if you just launch off of that, you go into nothing. And so it's like, it's a mathematical like game in your head where you're like judging that, like, okay, how big is that? How much speed do I need to take to this to clear that rock or to make it to that landing, you know? So yeah, that's what I like doing the most. I building jumps is fun too, but nowadays I'm less like motivated to like build big jumps and just spin until you hit, you know. Like it is still fun, but yeah, I feel like at this point in my life and my snowboard career, like, I don't got anything to prove.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty much just like riding what excites me. You yeah. know? So
I think one of the first scenes of the and we'll get to hunting, I promise, folks, but
yeah. Yeah, this is a hunt podcast.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I do hunt.
We're going to get there. We'll get there. This stuff's just so interesting yeah. to me. Yeah. I think so. You did a film with Sitka called
yeah.
River, right?
River.
And I think one of the first scenes in that, you're standing on this giant,
yeah, I was in Alaska,
super steep mm-hmm. face. Was it, I mean, was it feel like, are you scared?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking down,
terrified. That.
Really?
That one was really gnarly. And that one was actually, I get goosebumps right now just thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, that avalanche, like, it's awesome for film, right? It's suspenseful. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, but
yeah, visually, it was amazing.
Sucked. That was so scary. And I'm not going to say like, I got out of that barely got out of that. Like if you slow the footage down, like I was like so close to getting taken out there. And I'm not going to say like that was instant death, but I would have got, I don't know. Well, I don't know what would have happened. I would have been like severely injured. And that's just kind of like the risk you take, right? And that specific shot, I wanted that specific shot because like for this river film, like I wanted mm-hmm. something dramatic, right? And so mm-hmm. I chose that face. It's called Hotels, and only, you know, it's there's only a handful of people that have even ridden it, and I'm like, that's dramatic, like, yeah, I want that. And, you know, I got the okay from the guide to ride it, and you know, two turns into it and an avalanche breaks, and I barely made it out of it, and so like whatever, no harm, no foul. But yeah, that one was,
yeah, it looked, that was, yeah, I mean, a gnarly, it looked one. Gnarly visually, yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean I remember watching the film and looking at it and being like, I can't fathom, I don't know what that would be like. I couldn't talk myself into,
yeah. And that one's not to be glorified, like avalanches suck, and but they are crowd pleasers, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But it's just the facts. That yeah. one was so crazy though. So you get dropped off on the heli. I could send you a picture of it, but it's just this cone, right? And it's convex. Mm-hmm. So you can't see what's below you. And so it's all off memory and photos. You take photos.
It's a sheer face to you, yeah, so essentially.
Yeah, so you can only, I could only see like 20 feet in front of
that's
me.
That's so scary.
And it's just like to the abyss, right?
What?
And I can't, I had probably 10 feet of area that I could move because it was cornice all the way around. Mm-hmm. And if I fell off the backside, instant death, 1,000 footer to just nothing. No right. Way. And so it's like, it's interesting, man. Like, you get comfortable in uncomfortable situations, yeah. and you just do. It's kind of cool, honestly. To like, that was a very uncomfortable situation. And don't get me wrong, I was scared. Like, mm-hmm. you're gripped. Pretty much in Alaska, all the time you're gripped.
Yeah.
It's just big and scary. But yeah, you just like, you know, you accept the risk.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Right?
This might be one of the times where the adrenaline rush from that might not be the same as having a bugling bowl at 30 yards.
That's where I was going with this.
Is there a little correlation between the two? They're different.
So that's kind of the whole like storyline with River, mm-hmm. right? And like, you know, there's a lot that went into even getting to the point of making River, but like, I use a word, it's river, right? Uh-huh. And I learned this from a sports psychologist, mm-hmm. You know, back in the day from snowboarding. In that time, honestly, when I didn't know if I was going to be a snowboarder anymore or not. And I was reading all these books and I had a sports psychologist and it was a technique. I forget what it's called. There's a certain name for it. But yeah, it's basically, honestly, it's like Happy Gilmore. And going to his happy place. Like, that's literally the science behind it. Yes.
You probably got to bring up Happy Gilmore on the podcast.
That's all I can think about. That's a great scene.
It's a great scene. Yeah, but hilarious. That's literally what it is. So, like, you find something that you connect to. It can be a memory. It could be a word. It could be, like, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you connect with that word when you say it, and that enters your brain. It puts you at peace. Like, it mm-hmm. brings it, it like, will it, you know, will drop your heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I have used in snowboarding like forever since I learned it early 20s. And so that was kind of like, you know, when writing the story, that really was like, well, will this translate to elk hunting when an elk's like mm-hmm. bugling in front of your face? Like, will I be able to like calm myself down and like make a good shot? And, you know, the director of, River, Shannon Vandeveer, just awesome human that we just like, I was kind of just doing it on my own. And I just messaged Shannon. I followed him. He'd done that, Beyond the Horizon, that Sims mm-hmm. fishing mm-hmm. movie. I just liked his work. And we just, he's like, yeah, let's talk. And so we talked and he's like, oh, I'm so busy. And I'm like, yeah, it's all good. Well, maybe we'll work together on something in the future. And then, he called me back like a couple hours later and he's like, I thought about it. I'm like, let's talk some more. And that's it. And so mm-hmm. we just started talking and then I had written out like, you know, the rough kind of idea for it. But then Shannon and I just started talking so much and he just was like wanting to get, we didn't know each other. And he mm-hmm. just wanted to like get to know me. And I told him about the river. Right. And mm-hmm. he was like, that's it.
Yeah.
He's like, that's what we're. And so he's just so good at telling stories. And he just like molded that into our film. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I it was just, it was real. It was authentic. You know,
is that the same process you go through in your shot? Do you use that like in archery?
For sure.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more just like, I guess it's not really, it's more like when it's happening and your heart is just going insane, yeah. right? When you see the elk come in. That's more when I use it, you know, mm-hmm. I guess I've developed some bad habits in archery and I don't have the best process. I need a better process. And I've been actually shooting my bow a lot, because typically the winter comes mm-hmm. and I just don't shoot my bow at all.
And then
I like have a giant beard and my anchor points all messed up and I like, and you know, there's like some pressure you got, like, you're like, I gotta get ready for hunting season. Uh-huh. And so I've been shooting my bow a ton and I've really been, working on my process. And I wouldn't say river is like before the shot breaks. I wouldn't say that's my process. Maybe it will turn into that, but no, mm-hmm. it's more like when you're like, when you need to like,
yeah,
calm
there's that,
down.
That initial moment. When yeah. It's usually when you see it, the animal, yeah. like you're getting that interaction, the bull's bugling, you're kind of like, hey, yeah. this is developing, he might be coming. And then you get that first like visualization of a bull kind of working your way and you get that like initial just rush. Like your heart is just thumping like you're saying.
Man, it's interesting. Every bull that I've killed, like I've been so calm. Really? Like, it's crazy. Wow. I don't...
It's called experiences of high that's adrenaline what I wonder. Situations.
Is it? No? It's not your ability to manage stressful situations?
Yeah, I think so.
You must have gotten good at that, mm-hmm. your ability to handle fear.
Like, my first, when we were filming River, I like missed a bull. I tried to stop one and I like stopped him. Like I just had no idea what I was doing and just like was like, mew, you know, like so loud. It just scared him. So I made a lot of mistakes. Right. And went in the depths, like the full roller coaster. I mean, the film is like, it's true. That is like there could not be a truer, just like depiction of my first elk hunt. Mm-hmm. Like that, like we really captured like that was a very authentic capture of that. But that was good for me to like make those mistakes. Cause then when it actually happened and I kind of like wrote it off almost too, cause it was like 4 weeks in and my mentor, Johnny, he was like, all right, dude, I've given you like, he's like, I kind of got to get back to work. it was actually his last day. And then I was going to go hunt on my own after that. And so I kind of was like, maybe I'll come back with a rifle, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of just come to peace with that. And then, I mean, that bull just like, that was a gift.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Gift. Mm-hmm. It like, we put an insane stock on him, but it was a gift. And I just remember being like so calm. Like Johnny stopped him. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember like, I just let the shot go. And then afterwards I felt terrible. Like you can't get that arrow back, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And like I felt so bad. I was like, did I hit him good? I didn't know. I like it felt okay. And Johnny's like, you hit him high. And I'm like, and then he like turns and he's like, oh, it's way too forward. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's
I'm
the
like,
worst feeling in the world.
It was the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Oh my gosh. And honestly, it was a great shot.
Yeah,
like maybe slightly high, but like just right behind the shoulder blade. Yeah, I heard him die.
Yeah,
like it was good. Yeah, but that moment was terrible, right? Yeah. And then the bull I killed the next year, like a kind of same thing, buzzer beater. Kind of wrote it off, was totally fine. That like, and that was a gift too, man. They're all gifts, but that one was a major gift.
Yeah,
it walked right to me. I remember like just being super calm. And even after I shot it, I was just like, I like took a couple steps, you ran and just like fell over and died.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I don't think that was my experience as a new hunter, like newer, you know, I've had shots where I felt like that way, but I think you must have you must have a higher standard or a higher ability just initially getting into it and dealing with adrenaline and maybe some luck.
Probably a lot of luck and help.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some luck in all of it, right? To make it happen.
Yeah, I just remember being like an emotional wreck back in the day when you're first starting hunting, getting animal in range. You've been working all year for that one little moment.
I'm with you. I think the hardest part is like after an arrow is released because you can't take it back.
Yeah.
And there's that like unknown in between if you don't know exactly where you hit. And, you know, the bull goes off and doesn't tip over initially. There's that like...
Man,
it's a hard one to process.
The one I got last year, it was the first elk I had got just on my own. Like I've had so much help.
Yeah.
Like I have so much respect for people who just like be like, I'm gonna get into hunting, and they just like go figure it out on their own. Like I did not have that process. Mm-hmm. Like I've been just guided so well through this process. Like Johnny Burford, just Montana. OG,
another guy with a great beard.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, the story how we met is just like I originally got connected through Troy Hellman. He brought me on Benchmade Knives.
Yeah.
So I made a movie called Alignment. It was the first film I'd ever made on my own. Like wrote it out, directed, produced. It was about snowboarding and fishing. I went and lived up in northern British Columbia, and for the whole winter, and we just rode and fished. And I was like, it was awesome. And it kind of unlocked like a creative side in me that like I hadn't really tapped into. And so I really wanted to do something else. And I didn't want to just manufacture just some bullshit story. Like I wanted it to be real. And when Troy brought me on Benchmade, I got a message from Benchmade Knives on Instagram. He's like, hey, I watched Alignment. Like, let's talk. That was it. And so he's like, well, what do you want to do next? And I was like, well, I've always wanted to like get into hunting. And like, I had been waterfowl hunting at that point. But he's like, well, I can help with that. He's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, I want to hunt elk and I want to shoot it with a bow.
Just like him. Yeah. I can help with that.
He's like the best, dude. He's such a beauty.
Yeah, he's
right?
Great, man. Yeah, I love that guy.
So to just kind of like bring you up to speed. So he introduced me to the Born and Raised Outdoors guys.
Yeah.
They invited me to Montana to just go on a hunt with them. And I went out. It was Cody Kellum. Trent, I don't think Trent was there. And actually... Kevin Harlander was the shooter, actually. He was shooting it. And so I met those guys. I just like, such a funny story, man. Golly, how much time do we have? Probably not enough. But anyway, so I meet those guys and they take me on a hunt. And it was at the end of their season. They'd had a long season. And, and they were like, all right, we're didn't happen. And so they're like, we're going to go stay with my buddy Johnny. He's like, you should come see all his elk, you know? And I'm like, I'm going to Twin Bridges. I'm going to go fish with the Winston guys. And they're like, no, I come, you got to come. And I'm like, all right, fine. So like I go meet Johnny, sleep in his garage on a cot. And then all those guys leave the next morning. And Johnny and I were just like drinking coffee and just hanging out. And we just like connected, real similar upbringings, just like beards, obviously, you know, that's always a good connection.
walked in and saw each other. Yeah, and you're like, that's cool. That's my guy.
Cool. And, you know, so he goes, we just hung. And he's like, man, it's like, and I was just telling him, I'm like, dude, I really want to get into this. I'm like, I'm passionate about it. And so I leave, we exchange numbers, I leave and I'm driving to go fishing and he calls me and he's like, hey man, you want to go on a hunt with me? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. He's like, all right, we're going on horses. He's like, can you ride a horse? And I'm like, I have, you know, like how gnarly is this? Like, what are we doing? He's like, you'll be fine. I'm going to put you on a great horse. And so he like takes me out just, I think we went out like 16 miles, like super deep to just
he calls a bull in, right? And shoots it right below you.
Dude, I film him.
Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing this.
First night, it was insane. This really changed the trajectory of my life. Like this first night, like really did. Like we go and he's like, all right, we're going to go up and we're going to glass. And so we like hike up like an hour hike and we're glassing. We see some bulls and super windy. And he just like does a couple cow calls and it just like this bull just came in on a string and he's like, just stay here. And so he starts moving down the ridge to get the wind. And I see the bull because it was windy. It was hard to hear. I see the bull. He's moving down. He thought it was going to come down. I see him coming up. So I like waited till he looked at me and I kind of signaled for him. And then so the bull like did this giant wraparound, comes right underneath me, literally 20 yards from me. And I'm just sitting there just filming with my phone. I'm just like, don't move, you know? Yeah, Johnny shoots him like first shot, perfect. Gets another arrow in him. Like the shot was like this far apart from the other one. I mean, he's a weapon out there. You know? Watch the bull run, fall over, die right there. And we cut him up. I'd never cut up an animal before. And ate tenderloins. And I was just like, yep, I'm into this.
Yeah.
And so that was really it. And then, yeah, so started the conversation with Johnny about doing something. And then I had already a connection with Sitka through Black Diamond. I was doing like a signature line with Black Diamond and I wanted camo. And John Walbrick was the president of Black Diamond. And he was friends with Jonathan Hart from Sitka. And they kind of did this like backdoor deal. And so we ended up getting a Sitka print and we did that. Cool.
Yeah.
Black Diamond. Collab.
That was pretty cool.
That was really cool.
That ended up being a Sitka studio piece. And so like, then, you know, I was like, well, I want to do this film. And so it just like, man, it happens so naturally, you know,
Works.
Just feels like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like all roads in my life were eventually going to lead to this. I wish it would have happened sooner, but it happens. Everything happens for a reason. For a reason. Right.
What do you like about hunting?
Oh, buddy, I like it all.
Really?
I do. I mean, it all started, obviously, like why I think most people hunt for food, right?
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. But hunting has come to me in a time in my life when I really needed it. And that's, I think that's what I love the most about it. I was just kind of like, just stagnant in my life. And, and just like, dude, I deal with like, just, I deal with super high highs and super low lows. Like we all go through it. Right.
Sure.
And I just was, just kind of just stagnant in my life. Not really, I mean, I got an awesome wife and she is like so good to me. Like my life is so good. And sometimes I just like, don't know why I don't feel good, you know? And I just needed something. I needed something to like occupy my mind. Cause my mind just like runs like it's a million miles an hour. And it's so hard for me to like, so hard for me to commit to something. It's right. Right. So it's like snowboarding, fishing, music. I love playing music. And music also came to me in a time in my life where I was like probably the most like depressed I'd ever been. Right. And I just like, it felt like that was what hunting was for me at that time. And so it's just been such a positive for me. It's like, it's basically taught me, well, for one, you gotta be really strong to do it. Right. And so like, I'm usually like pretty strong during the winter snowboard season. And then like summertime comes and you like start drinking beer and fishing and like you're active, you know, I go backpacking all the time, but you're not like, and then I was like, wow, dude, like September is right around the corner. Like I need to be strong. So it like forced me to like start going to the gym like all summer long. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just feel better. My body feels better. My mind feels better. It just, I don't know, man. I needed it. I really needed hunting. And, and I'm just like, I'm going to do it forever. Mm-hmm. I'm going to snowboard forever.
Sure.
Like no, 100%. But snowboarding's like, I mean, hunting's hard on the body too, but you can go kill ducks until the day you die pretty much. You know what I mean? I don't know. I love it, man. I love where the animals live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love the places it takes you.
Yeah. And like, the animals themselves are so fascinating to me. I'll never ever get over a bull bugling.
Yeah.
Like that sound, if even the first one of the year, I look forward every fall. I look forward to it, that you get that first bugle where you're like, definitely that was a bugle.
Yeah.
And you feel it ripple through. And then as you get closer and closer to that animal, he's bugling, you start to like pick him up through the trees and smell him.
Oh, that smell.
All the smell.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We were just talking about that, but yeah, there's, I don't know what it, they're just so fascinating.
Yeah.
Animals in general. I mean, mule deer too, Brady.
Mule deer. Yes.
They are. They're just cool.
I don't know.
It's hard to put in words.
It's probably good though. Like, precursor to your snowboard season too. You talk about like
not
letting yourself you're not letting yourself go in the summer, but like now you're able to prepare yourself more. And you could totally hear like when you were explaining how much hunting meant to you, the passion there. Like,
oh dude, I'm a psycho. Yeah. I got a bow press, a vise. I'm like tuning all my own stuff, building my, like the amount of time I spent in building my elk arrow last year was, I couldn't even tell you how much time. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Absolutely insane. And I'm really fortunate that my job is snowboarding and I have a lot of time.
I have
a lot of free time, you know.
Set yourself up for hunter.
Yeah. And so I just like, I have a really hard time committing to things. And if I'm going to commit to something, I'm going to commit 100% to it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I grew up in like the mountain climbing mecca in the Eastern Sierras. It's like world class Yosemite, you know, the gorge in Inyo County, like never got into it. I just couldn't commit to it. Mm-hmm. And right now I live in Bellingham where it's like the mountain biking mecca, right? Mm-hmm. Not into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I have my things that, that I know that I can like put 100% into it. And like, I'm basically like making investment for later on in my life is the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so with hunting, it's just this kind of beautiful cycle where I can snowboard all winter long. And then I literally just like shut that off and I go like straight into, I'm shooting my bow more this winter. I'm like, I'm going to shoot it as much as I can, but, I just start shooting my bow and I'll probably do another Texas hunt. Hopefully I get invited on this one again. I think I will.
Yeah.
Just with a good group of boys, man. Jeff Helm sets it up. And just a solid group. So I got to do that this last, I guess it was in June. So not quite spring. But yeah, I got my first Axis the year. That was really cool. Really, really tasty. Yeah, just kind of like basically train and shoot like every day and go basically get ready for elk season is kind of like, the mindset. And then, after that, kind of there's a little bit of a downtime between snowboarding and I guess like the more I get into it, there's plenty of hunts you could be doing.
Sure. Like, yeah, it opens all kinds of doors, yeah, starting to open up. You start looking at spring bear and
yeah. I want to get into more of that. I just, time, you know, is probably the biggest thing. And it's expensive too. Holy cow.
Yeah.
It's like, it is. Hunting, yeah. Dude, I ate 2 elk tags this year.
Ouch.
I ate an Idaho tag and a Montana tag.
Yeah.
And I could have gone back to Montana, and probably, well, I think that there was a good chance of shooting a deer, and maybe an elk too. But I just had other things going on and I was just like, I don't know. I had a tough elk season this year. It was like, it was a really hard one for me. I was hunting. I mean, I was hunting with friends here and there, but like any encounter I had with an elk, like I was by myself.
Did I read, or maybe I heard you say in a video, did you hunt 29 days for elk?
Oh, so that was last year in Colorado. Oh, okay. I killed on day 28 or 29.
And a lot of that was on your own.
Yeah. Like the majority of it. So I made like, we were kind of talking about it, like Scotty Lego and I were going to go on an elk hunt. He wanted to film it. It was his first elk hunt. I really just wanted to go hunt for myself. No cameras. I just like, I've had a lot of help. Right. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I want to take what I've learned and like, I want to prove it to nobody else. Like I care less.
Just
I want
for
this
you.
For me. Like I need to like prove this to myself that like, that I can do this. Right. And so Scotty really wanted to film it. He only had like the first like 6 or 7 days of the season. And we just went OTC Colorado. And I'm like, and so, yeah, whatever. I was like, okay, dude, I get it. You want to film your first elk hunt? Let's do it. But it's like, I want it to be more about you and not about me. So he was obviously first shooter. And he ended up getting one 3rd or 4th day of the season. Like an incredible story.
Made a good shot.
But yeah, it was great.
Tension release. I was noticed. I'm like, man, it's
yeah. And so after that, we still had a couple of days. They're like, let's film you now. And I'm like, no, dude, the story is done. This is all about like, it's like Scotty. We had a great time. It was honestly, it was so much fun. I'm super glad we did do that.
And
we
made it cool for doing it the way you wanted to do it afterward.
Yeah, we made a cool film about it, but it was perfect. He got his bull. Everybody left. And then I just got to hunt on my own. Mm-hmm. And I like met up with homies here and there, but like for the most part, I was just alone and I was in elk a lot. Like I had a lot of elk encounters and just elk experience. And that's like all you can really ask for, you know. I blew a ton of opportunities.
How'd you say mentally ready throughout that whole long process? Like excited every day.
Dude,
after
I'm
messing
just
up.
A psycho, man. It's just, you know how it is. Yeah. It doesn't like
just
there's
fun.
There's a you just set a goal. You like I go into every hunt with a very low expectation, but an extremely high goal. And when you set goals for yourself, it's like there's no stronger draw than that. You know, it's like I have a goal, and I like I'm like going to do literally everything I can. Mm-hmm. Like my goal, what I told myself, I was like, I'm going to Colorado. And I'm going to hunt every single day until I kill an elk or the season's over. And that was it. And that was what I was doing. So that decision was already made months before, you know. And my track record for killing early doesn't exist. I've always killed late. And every hunt I've ever done has been buzzer beater. And so I've just kind of like set myself up for that. Ended up I was alone, man. I think I killed on day 28, but it took me 2 days to get him out. And dude, it was crazy. I was up for 33 hours straight.
Yeah.
It was insane. Like I had driven through the night to this. I was in a really good area with a buddy, but it was just a hellhole. And he left and I stayed an extra night and I called a bull in to 8 yards. It was so cool, man. I thought he was a giant. I honestly thought it was just coming. I thought I'm like, this is happening. But he ended up just being like a little forky and not a legal bull because it was like just scrub oak and all I could see was like these forks coming in, and I drew and he stops perfect at 8 yards. I was like, wow, that was cool. And then it kind of hit me. I was like, if I actually kill in here, like I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to get it out on my own. Like, it was just terrible, deep and just a hellhole. And so I was like, I made the smart decision to get out of there. I went to an area that I had hunted before. I kind of knew, I had encounters in there. And so I kind of had an idea of where I wanted to go. So I slept in my truck, got up super early, heavy pack, packed into where I was just going to make a spike camp, just dumped all my gear. And then I went and hunted for the morning. I was going to go back to camp and set up, but then I just heard some bugles and you know how it happens. Mm-hmm. And, I ended up just hunting the rest of the day. And I ended up, killing it last light. And, and honestly, like I made a pretty bad mistake here where, or it's just a good lesson where like this bull came in and he just stopped perfectly. He was like, I guessed him at 20. He ended up being like 22 yards, but like, I was like on him, like ready to go. And he stepped and he quartered away. And I had all the time in the world. I could have just reset, but I punched it, dude. And I hit him back. I knew I hit him back. And quartering away, like you hit him back, that's like way back, right? Mm-hmm. And so I like get another arrow immediately, drilled him again, but it was like pretty dark. And this was actually the shot that like really got him. I guessed him at 55 and drilled him. But I didn't really know, right? Because it was like last night, pretty dark. And then he just like doesn't even run. He kind of just steps. I range him at 75, shot him again. And I'm like, okay, all I really know is that like my first shot was back. And so I'm like, I'm just going to like, and I could see him. He went and bedded down. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to like watch him until I can't see him anymore and just listen. And then I'm going to leave him. It was cold. It was late in the season. And so pace actually right before that, it was a small bull, like barely legal bull that I shot. But at that point, 28, 29 days,
big bull.
Like, yeah.
That's
like,
how it goes.
But dude, right after that, a big one comes in.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, you gotta be kidding me.
Of course.
Yeah, that's how it happens.
That's how it works.
But I didn't care. I was stoked to just shoot one. And so anyway, I'm like getting ready to leave. And I think another bull, I hear something, I think another bull is coming in. And I can like kind of still see there's a bit of a moon out and it's a bear. And he goes right to where I shot him.
Yeah, ooh. Picking up. Blood.
And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. And a buddy of mine had just shot Troy Ball.
Troy. We know so many of the same people.
I just met Troy through Born and Raised. Yeah, and just a solid. Everybody's so cool in the hunt industry. They've been really, really kind to me. But I had just that year, he had shot a bull in Colorado and a bear got it. He had to leave it overnight. It's a really nice bull. Like I felt so bad for him. And so I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm staying with this elk now. And so, dude, I just started like throwing rocks and like sticks at this bear because he was like literally going up. I didn't want to bump him. That was like the main thing. I was like, I don't want him to bump my bull. And so the bear like didn't really know. And I was like high and the bear was where I shot him. It was like kind of down at the bottom and he looped around and I just was making like noise. I didn't yell because I didn't want to, you know, bump my bull. And so the bear bailed and I was like, okay. And I had like all my warm clothes and I just, put everything on and just sat with him for like hours. I think I went and looked for my arrow at like midnight. Couldn't find my arrow, but I found really good blood. I found him. I think I found him like shortly after that. He didn't go far. Or actually, he was right where he bedded down. It was like 100 yards away. And, I just got to work. And just alone, he died in just a steep, just shitty place. Like scrub oak, sagebrush. Like no way to like
hold him
up.
You
know, use like 550 cord and like pull the hind quarter up so you can like get in there. And actually, I had those Born and Raised meat bags, which are awesome with the zipper.
Yeah,
that helped so much doing it on my own. I got him like basically I got him in bags and like the sun is rising, but there was nowhere to hang the meat. So I had to like shuttle meat all the way down across the creek up to the north facing slope. And I took a load back to camp. Yeah, by the time I got back to camp, it had been 33 hours of awake. It was insane.
Those are the days you remember.
And then I set my alarm for 2 hours, slept for two, went back down, got another load. And then I was just like, I have to sleep. So I slept through the night and then I did it like a, I took both those loads to the truck, got it on like a truck camper with some ice, and I got it in a cooler, and I went all the way back, and a freaking bear climbed that tree, and it, I didn't have the best, you know, trees to hang it on, but he just climbed and he just swiped one of my bags, and a hind quarter fell. He didn't even eat it. He just like got yeah. all dirty, and yeah. I lost about half a hind quarter. I was pretty upset about that because I worked really hard.
I had one I packed out 9 miles one way. It took me 3 days, and for first load out. I've got my camp because I'm backpacking. I got my camp. I got back straps, tendies, yep. and just whatever loose meat I could carry. Right. Yep. So I lay my meat bag on top of my Yeti cooler on one side of my 4Runner, and I sleep on the other side of the 4Runner. Yep. Right. So it's right there. It's like 8 feet from me. Right. Bear comes in the middle of the night. Way. Yeah. It snatches it back.
Didn't even hear it.
Never heard it, man. I was so knackered. I was beat, man. Just completely torched. But yeah, he come in, grabbed a backstrap just like that, though. He didn't eat the whole thing. He just kind of pulled it in the woods and snacked on a little bit. But yeah, it was literally
wild.
You know, 8 feet from my head, and I'm sleeping under the stars, you know, next to my truck. But yeah, those pesky bears.
I'm going to be honest. I was like, and I mean, I've had bear and it's really good. And I also, my buddy gave me a jar of bear fat and it is so good.
Yeah, Brady.
And so I've kind of like wanted to shoot bear. But after that, I was like, I'm going to shoot a bear. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Get my revenge.
Kind of, yeah. Yep.
That kind of stuff's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a lot of admiration for the fact that you went out and did that on your own. Like,
oh, dude, that was awesome.
I get asked, it's one of the most common questions I get actually, because I hunt quite a little. My preference is if I'm not filming a project for here, yeah. I prefer to hunt alone, yeah. right? So I love elk hunting alone. It's my jam. I really like it. I love that whole disconnect. One of my favorite things is like day 2-3, where I pretty much forgot everything else that's going on in my whole life other than this right in front of me. Like I'm just trying to kill an elk. Yeah. And I love that feeling. Like I crave it. Mm-hmm. But, people ask all the time, like, oh, how do you do that alone? Well, how do you do it? How'd you do it? Like,
what? Well, I think it's kind of like what you just said too. It's just, you get so in tune with just your surroundings. You kind of like, you know, like your survival, like what you have, like, you know, like your food that you have, you know, your shelter. I mean, you hunt with a 10 millimeter, you know, it's like,
did you have to figure all that out though? I mean, or did you kind of felt like you had like a good base from growing up where I you mean, did?
Dude, just growing up backpacking my whole life, gotcha. it was pretty, pretty straightforward, with that. I don't know. I think I'm around a lot of people and I have been, for a lot of my life, you know, traveling and also like, you know, whatever, like maybe a small level of fame, right? Where you like go to these, you know, award shows or video premieres where you're kind of like the center of attention. And I just don't really like that. And so it's like, it's kind of nice to just disappear.
Yeah.
And just like, I used to do that with fishing. I would go up to Northern British Columbia before I was married and I would just like spend like 2 months up there just fishing, just camping and fishing. And I love it. It's the best, you know? And I mean, shout out to my wife because she still lets me do that, which is she's the best.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's like you're selfish. You got to dial your selfishness back just a little bit when other people matter.
Yeah. You would you say you fall in love with archery?
I love it. I used to golf. I actually have not golfed once since I started shooting a bow. It's just
it's way better in golf.
Well, it's
way
so better. It is so much fun. Like, and I got like two like pretty sweet courses, like real
ranges
near near my house. One's got a really good just range where you can shoot up to 70.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm really fortunate, I can shoot up to 60 at my house, which is awesome. I think if I couldn't shoot at my house, I would be not living range. There.
That's what I do. you'd be driving. I know you would. Just listening to you talk, you'd be driving to the range. Yeah.
No, for sure. But it's like there's something about just like getting up first thing in the morning, no coffee, nothing, and going and like taking your one shot. You know, kind of like what Bert does.
Yeah.
With shoot to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, that was really cool. I think that just the act of I'm just drawn to it. I don't even know. I don't even have an answer, right? Like, I'm just drawn to hunting. I haven't figured out why I hunt. Food, sure. Mm-hmm. Exercise, you know, just spending time with these amazing animals. Like, you name it. I love it. But I still haven't just, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm new. I'm, like, such a rookie, and I have so much to learn. And I think that is what is also, like, driving me, is because, like, in snowboarding, like, I understand, like, you know, what it is mm-hmm. to be good at something, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not a good hunter, like, at all. Like, I do not consider myself a good hunter at all. And this year really proved that, because I made some just fatal errors shouldn't have happened. But, well, I mean, but no, they needed to happen is the mm-hmm. thing. That's the thing. Like, I was in the depths this season on two separate times. I was in the depths, and then I climbed out of them, and then I got real in the depths. But then afterwards, when I just kind of, like, drove home sad for myself, you know, mm-hmm. like, no. Well, I actually did shoot a doe, which was cool. So I didn't come home totally empty handed, mm-hmm. but, it's all perspective, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've been so fortunate, lucky, blessed, whatever you want to call it, to have shot elk the first three years mm-hmm. elk hunting. Mm-hmm. Right. And the first two were just, like, totally help. Like, it was all help. But, like, to do it on my own in Colorado last year was, like, that was for me, and I needed that.
It's
right?
So rewarding.
And, yeah, it was so cool. And so this year I was, like, kind of went into it a little
cocky.
No, I wouldn't say I went into it the same way. Low
confident.
Low expectation, high goal, mm-hmm. but I was like, I'm going to get one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, deep sure. down, I was like, I got all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, my wife was like, all right, you got the month. Hopefully it doesn't take that long this time, but,
yeah,
like,
but go.
You got the month. And she had a bunch of time off and after that. And so we had a trip planned. So I, like, had kind of a hard out. I needed it big mm-hmm. time. Because now I'm like, I'm real fired up. Like, oh, I
it's
am.
Even more now. You're dipped even further.
Oh yeah. And I got an Idaho tag,
nice.
For next year.
Did you drive down? Or did you get online?
I got online.
There you go.
Wow, got lucky.
Nice.
You got a random number.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played the whole game.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of fun in a weird way, because yeah. it's like, okay, what number am I going to get? My yeah. tag can still be there. Oh, I got it. Check it out as quick as you can.
Yeah. So, and whatever, like maybe it doesn't happen, but what I do know next year, but what I do know is that I will not make the same mistake that I made mm-hmm. this year. And I'll mm-hmm. tell you about it if you want to. I don't know
yeah,
how much
it.
Time we got. But I'll just
got
tell
time
you.
If you got time.
I'll tell you. I got a hockey game and, like,
yeah, we
got
to get to
hours.
The hockey game.
Yeah, no, I got a dinner.
You
rezzo.
Got a pregame.
Apparently, I'm going to, like, a really nice restaurant.
Oh,
bar
nice.
Or bar, Bizarre Mar or something. I don't know.
Bizarre
I don't
Mar?
Go that side.
Yeah,
of town.
I know, dude. I was going to ask you guys, do you guys just stay away from the strip?
Yeah, I don't know nothing about this town besides for where Gohan is and where my house is and my girlfriend's place.
I love
place.
It. That, yeah, I would imagine, because it's just a whole other world down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I'm down here once a week probably, and I've been doing it for probably the last 6 years, I guess, and I haven't been to the strip and I can't remember when.
That's awesome.
It's been ages.
I brought a gambling fund. So
there you go.
We're gonna hit the tables tonight
nice.
For sure,
there you
dude.
Go.
I'm living it up.
You got a whole night out
yeah,
of hell yeah.
I'm living mm-hmm. it up. But okay, so, like, try to give you the quick and dirty of the, I mean, I had so many encounters, which is really all you can ask for,
yeah.
right? And it's like, and I don't, it, when it really comes down to it, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm taking what I've learned, and I'm just doing what I can, right? Like, doing it to the
you're
best.
You're
know
figuring
you know.
It out. That's
you,
what everybody's doing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. People ask me all the time, what do I do? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can give you some ideas.
So situational.
But reality is like, when you're out there, you're just trying to sort it out on
yeah.
your own.
And
you're
instinct, dude. Use your
yeah,
intuition,
instinct.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I went into an area that I had been in before, and I knew I had bedded elk in this area. I knew where they were going. Mm-hmm. And I knew what the wind, I mean, well, I knew what it did that day. So I basically had a pretty good game plan, and it turned out to be exactly how it was when I bedded the elk there days before. And so I went, there were elk just bugling their faces off. There's a giant bedding area. There's a bunch of cows in there. And I there was at least four, maybe five different elk bugling in there. They're kind of spread out. And I positioned myself above them on a ridge, like I hiked up because in the morning I hiked up on the opposing side of the ridge, so all my wind was dumping down. And when the wind switched, I got above us probably like, I don't know, 150 feet above them and 200-300 yards in front of them. And I was just kind of just sitting there and waiting. And I just, like, there was chaos. I didn't, like, really have, I was trying to figure out my game plan. I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? Am I going to, like, just, like, do sneak a couple in. Cow calls and just see if something happens? Am I going to sneak in? That's what I was going to do, was just, like, do a couple cow calls and just, like, see what happened, you know? And I was in a pretty good position for that. And I just, all of a sudden, I just hear some, like, obviously human bugles in the very bottom. And this is at like probably 10:30. Wind is just, thermals are pumping up and they're at the very bottom. And then it's just commotion, barking. And I know it's not from me. I'm positioned very well. And so what ended up happening was like two other hunters started coming up from the bottom. And there was elk, like, it was such chaos in there that, like, I think the ones at the bottom, like, just busted. But there was like ones like higher up, and I could just, they were still bugling their way up, and I was already above them and in front of them. So I was like, my only chance is to just move as fast as I can and try. It was like up this like kind of draw, and I was up above, and I was like, I know that they're where they're gonna go. Or I thought I knew. And so, well, I did. They ended up going right where I was going. Yeah. So, like, I was just deadfall, making, like, so much noise, just, like, just trying to do everything I could. These bulls are bugling. And I'm, you know, I'm, like, trying to kind of listen. But, like, I'm really, like, have a destination that I want to get to. And just, I'm probably halfway to my destination, and an elk just... 6x6 just pops right up in front of me, and I'm like, oh my god, knock an arrow, and I'm just like pinned, right? And I'm in the worst position ever. I have a giant deadfall that's like on its side with just snaggle branches everywhere. I'm like, literally could not be in a worse position. And he just bugles, like, he's probably 40 at this point. He goes by a tree. I took like two steps up to try to get like a little bit, and I had like, you know, pie plate size window, maybe a little bit bigger. And this bull, he just comes in, stops, and you can hear him breathing out of his nostrils, right?
Oh yeah.
He's just breathing. You can see his nostrils flare. Your senses are so heightened. You can just see his eyes flicker. You're just at literally you're so in tune. He stops and he just like rips a bugle, like probably inside 30, and just comes like point blank right to me. And he stops, and I shot, and I hit the only branch, literally the only branch. It was like a good size branch too, and it just like literally broke the branch in half. And my arrow just goes pew, clean miss. And I could not believe that it happened like that. It was so close, right? Yeah. And that was probably like halfway through my hunt, so I was like pretty down, but not destroyed. And then that same day, I went on like an pretty insane, I made a good play in just I went all the way down and up the other side because there was this screamer who just would not stop bugling, and I just it was so nasty. I just bugled my way the whole way up, just in a bugle battle for like an hour and a half, and I got him at 27 yards, and it was so thick I had to stand on a root wad just to even get a shot. And he came in, and all I could see was his horns. And he just, like, you can't really do anything at that point. He wasn't coming in any further. So that made me feel like a little bit better. So like, whatever, like that was cool. That was a cool experience. I was really upset that I missed. I was like, I shouldn't have, that was unnecessary. Some of it was out of my control because I didn't really get to do it the way that I wanted to do it. But because, you know, there was other factors involved, but the one that I really messed up on, so I was watching just the herds of elk and on private, and I'd been in this area before, and I knew that the rejects got sent.
Kicked off.
Yeah, they would go. But I'd actually been in there earlier in the season, and the bull that that I actually had an encounter with, he had cows at the time. He was a good bull. But then there's a giant in there, and he kicked him out. So when I came back, I was, because I have footage of him, I was like, that's the same bull. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, whatever. I watched him for like hours, right? And they there was like three or four bulls that string out. And long story long, man, they I think I have a pretty good idea. You know, he was probably 2 miles away at this point. I think I have a pretty good idea of where he's going. And so, yeah, I get within probably 250 yards of him. And I'm like, okay, I think I know there's a wallow here. And I think I know where he's going to go. And I was like kind of down in like a marshy wallow, like, or just marshy bottom, like moosey bottom. And I get to where I want to go, and he's still pretty far out, and the wind sucked. So I like backed out, repositioned, which wasn't as ideal, but you're just playing the wind, right? Mm-hmm. And I go, and he starts raking. I see him, just pieces of him, and I see he's raking a tree, and I'm like, perfect. So I like kind of like boogie towards him, and I get within like 100 yards from him, and he's raking. I move closer, and then he stops raking, and I just kind of like slow down, stop, listen, and I don't hear anything anymore. And I'm like, I'm like ready to go. Arrow knocked. Like I'm like it's I'm really ready to kill this bull.
Yeah,
like really ready. And dude, he just I'm like I have a big like willow just bush like kind of you know 40, 50 yards in front of me, and he just appears coming right towards me. And I, dude, so much of life in general, but hunting is split second decisions, man. Mm-hmm. And I had time to do one of two things. I either drew or ranged. And my instinct was just, I was like, I need to range. Cause I wasn't expecting, I thought he was going to this like timber. Yep. He was coming out into the open. And so I thought I was going to have to close the distance was what like my was going on in my head. And yep. He came right to me. And so I just like immediately ranged. He was like 53 or something. And then he's moving like pretty quick. And I didn't call or anything like it. Like he didn't know I was there.
Yeah, he's completely unaware.
And so now he's just moving right towards me, 40, probably 30. And I'm just pinned, just standing there like an idiot, just like can't draw. And I'm like, I could not believe it, dude. I was so mad. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, okay, maybe I get lucky. And he stops and he's looking at me and he knows like something's up. And he stopped and he keeps walking. And he stops like probably, I don't even know, I didn't range. Close, really close. He bumps, I bark, I draw. But he bumped pretty far and I just didn't. He stopped broadside too.
Yeah.
Like if I had somebody with me ranging,
yeah,
like,
to help you out.
But, I ranged like where I thought he was afterwards. It was like 60, too far to guess.
True. That's just the way it goes.
Oh,
I mean, that's just, dude,
are you kidding me?
Sometimes you just can't predict.
If I would have drawn there, but that was the thing with more experience, I'd be like, okay, he's generally they're moving in a general direction. He's moving in my direction. Draw.
Yeah.
He's 50 yards from you. Draw.
It's hard, man. Hindsight's always 20/20 too. Yeah, I mean you look back on it and you're like, oh, I should have done that, I should have done this. But in the moment, it's like you're saying you're making split second decisions yeah. that have to be made.
I'm a rookie.
No, man. I mean it's like I told you earlier, you've been hunting, what, 3 years, 4 years now?
This is my fourth year at this point.
I mean, I've been hunting a lot of my life, but bow hunting for 24 years, I guess. But I promise you, in 24 years down the road, you're going to be, we'll probably sit across from the table just like this, yeah, and you'll come back and say, man, guess what I screwed up on?
Yeah. You know?
Because I had epic screw ups this year. Epic.
Yeah.
Epic. So.
It happens. I know.
I get it.
I know. But it's like you put so much into it, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
Isn't it so hard to get an opportunity with a bow?
It is so hard.
So hard.
It is so hard to get a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. And it just, I felt like nothing was going right for me. And I wasn't in the best headspace, like even before the season. I just like, dude, my bow like came out of my vise and like, dude, this is actually still. I thought I was gonna lose my finger, but it's just almost, or not my finger. Sorry, my nail. Just stuff like that. Just yeah. things were just felt like I was going against the grain, and like there was an opportunity. I went to a new zone, and I was just like, there's no elk around, and I'm like, oh, this looks like a good place to bugle. So I just like let one rip, and like. Literally 30 yards in front of me in like this little bottom, this bull just pops up. I like scared him. He just pops up and he's like, I'm out of here.
What
I'm like,
the hell?
Just, yeah. Like, I just could not get it right.
He's in my bedroom.
You know?
Sometimes it's so. Like that. It is funny too. I'm like that too. Going into a hunting season, it's interesting like where your headspace and your focus is. And I can definitely look back onto seasons where I can tell you that like I went into that season with a better focus, a better headspace, and I had better results because of it. And then sometimes you go into it just a little bit disconnected, discombobulated. Yeah. Like things just aren't going the way that you want them to in life. You're just not as prepped as you want to be.
First season was like a week out instead of right now. And even though you want it to be there, you're not ready.
And it shows. Yeah, I know that feeling exactly.
That's very much where I was
this day and age.
Which sucked
because you gotta wait like 9 more months. I always think that pack out, you know, like whether
that's right.
you're successful or not,
that's right.
you know, and then you're driving home, you're like, man, I can't believe I have to wait another whole year basically to
elk season's coming up
to do this again.
We only got 2025 here.
You guys got elk plans this year?
Yeah, I bought an Idaho tag.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool. We'll have to compare zones and see if we might be able to link up.
It's funny. The zone I got, Troy Hellman hunted last year.
Okay.
And he was like, I will never go back. He's like, worst zone ever.
Might be the same zone.
But it's funny, though. My buddy who hunts that, like, that's his zone that he goes every year. And he's got a group of buddies who goes, and he's like, come hunt with us. Nice. And that was really my only option, really. That was not my first choice.
Yeah. Mine was my sixth, I think.
Yeah, I think mine was fifth or so.
We might have the same one.
Yeah, dude, let's
that'd
chat.
Be funny. It'd be hilarious.
Let's chat about it. Yeah. Or I don't know. Do we, like...
Oh, we chat. I chat. Yeah. We'll chat.
Okay.
Off air chat. Brady won't chat.
I won't chat.
That's
not,
cool.
Not here, but later we will.
Sure. Off camera, I'm more open.
Okay. I mean, I'm learning all the things. No, I mean, I understand. Like, you keep things close. But anyway, I'm excited to hunt elk again.
Yeah.
And I mean, Washington has elk.
For sure.
It's just, and I hunted... My second year, I hunted solo. I did 10 days in Washington solo, and it was awesome. I actually did have one really good opportunity. It was just so thick. I called one into 30 and just couldn't get a shot. But the thing is the season is like smack dab right in the middle. Well, it fluctuates, but it's only 12 days, and it's like usually kind of like right in the middle of September. And it's like, man, I feel like I would have a better chance of just committing to – an area that I have a month to hunt, you know,
it takes time. I tell everybody that, like, what I think the biggest factor is time. Like how it takes encounters and lots of them sometimes to make it happen.
So
I get that. Takes time,
dude. I love it. I'm in it. I'm gonna be in it until the day that I die or something happens where I can't hunt anymore. I love it so much.
I wanted to ask you one more question if you don't mind. What's the perception within the realm of snowboarding of hunting? What
good question. So I didn't know, right? And I was kind of worried about that,
right?
I even like talked to one of my sponsors, LibTech, and I was like, hey, like, just so you know, like, I'm making an elk, I'm making a hunting film.
Yeah, I'm going bow hunting.
Yeah.
And I wasn't
100% sure how they were going to take it, but they were super cool. They were like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
like, cool. Yeah. Like my new board, like I have a signature board with them. My one that's in stores now has like that sick arrow on the base.
Yeah,
and then my new one, can't really talk about it, but you'll like it.
It's coming.
Yeah, you'll like it. We did fish and now we're going hunt. But so I would say that I wasn't quite sure like what my audience, right, would think of releasing a hunting film and starting to put out like hunting content. And honestly, like, was received really well.
There's
always going to be people who don't agree with that, and there's nothing wrong with that. I had one of my good friends who's a vegan actually hit me up. He's like, hey man, like, I watched River and I really liked it. Like, I liked the way that like you showed like reverence for the animal, and that, you know, that like it's not this just like bloodlust perception that some people have of hunting. And I really think that there's a lot more common ground with not just snowboarders, just outdoor enthusiasts in general than we think, right? I actually, on the way here, I listened to the Randy Newberg episode.
Yeah.
And
Randy's the man.
Oh my gosh, what a beauty.
Yeah.
And man, it really kind of like scared me about the Utah bill.
Yeah.
Like, what? That's the first time I've heard about that. And so I'm like, okay, how can I make a difference? Like, like I don't, hunting doesn't need like just me to go on just Sweet Hunts and start a YouTube channel and like, I'm down to do that and go on Sweet Hunts. But I'm, in my mind, I'm like, how can like I be of like a positive influence on hunting as a whole? And so like all the work, like, you guys did with the Prop 127, right? And mm-hmm. and I mean, it was collective, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you guys were like really instrumental in that, I would say, and that got me fired up. So I was stoked to just repost stuff and just kind of get that word out, because I feel like my audience mainly is non-hunters. Although like I now have started to get hunters who are interested in stuff that I do. But so I'm like, okay, well, let's say like the wolf introduction in Colorado, mm-hmm. like that only passed by like a very small margin. So I'm like, okay, so like, what if I was able to use my voice and my platform to educate? I'm not telling you what to do. I don't want to tell mm-hmm. you what to do. Mm-hmm. Do whatever you want. That's the most beautiful thing about life. You get to choose, man.
Yep.
But it's solely from like an uneducated perspective that you don't know that hunters are conservationists. Mm-hmm. And I was there, man. Before I hunted, I didn't know. I was like, how can you be killing something yet helping that
species? Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And that was purely just from an uneducated stance. And now I've learned so much and have a lot of learning to do, but like, I understand that. And I'm like, okay, well maybe like I could have got that, you know, the wolf bill out to some people that some swing voters who maybe don't hunt at all, but like maybe like if you were to give that message in a non-confrontational way with just some science-based facts, like who knows, maybe that could have made a difference.
I think that was the biggest difference to that whole prop. I mean, the way that vote went, given the fact that Colorado is the way it is, it was really just grassroots. It was just people like you, people, you know, Brady, I mean, anybody that called or, you know, emailed a friend or just, you know, shot a phone call to somebody there that they knew in Colorado and just basically said, this is important to me. This is why, this is what makes sense. This is why I believe the way I do. And like that really resonated and generated like a movement that I was like, wow, this is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
You know, what people were able to do. And it was really just, it was just people, just people talking. And I think, I mean, I get wrapped up in this a lot. It's like, what can I do? You know what I mean? Like, what is conservation? What can trail do for conservation? Well, it's like, I can't like do any, you know, anything really, but I can.
You can do something.
I can do little things. Yeah. Like I could talk about it. I can be aware. I can be educated and I can follow, you know, what's going on and offer, you know, education to friends and family or whoever it is that's within my realm and just, you know, try to get the word out. Right.
Yeah.
We have a lot of common ground between people who hunt and don't hunt.
People
don't think there is, but there really is a lot. If you sit down with them, like snowboarders and hunters, we both love beautiful places.
Public land.
Yeah. We love it all.
Actually, there's a skier. His name is, Griffin Post. And he is a hunter. Mm-hmm. And he wants to make a film. I don't know like how much I can really talk about it, but he asked me to be involved in it. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, I mean, I think it started with the Supreme Court case of the Wyoming hunters, the mm-hmm.
corner
crossing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think there is some land grab happening in the crazies, I think. And like maybe some bringing some awareness of that, like apparently mm-hmm. there's some public land that might be cut off. So we're talking about, he's doing it. And he asked me if I wanted to be involved and I think it would be a cool thing to be involved because that's it, man. It's like, it's public land. And so that like listening to, I listened to it on the plane this morning, your podcast with Randy. And I was like, yo, I'm fired up on that. Like, where, put me to work. No, I'm serious. Like, even the Prop 127 that that thankfully went our way, right? Like, that got me fired up because I'm like, okay, here's something that's like so new in my life, hunting, that I deeply am connected to and just love, and it's just it's a new love, right? And I'm like, okay, well, like, there's groups out there that like actually just want to take that away completely. They want to eliminate hunting from the landscape. And like the majority of the people who are listening to this podcast, they understand that. They understand how hunters are conservationists. But like the majority of the people who, you know, follow me because I snowboard, they don't understand that. And so it's like, how can you, like, I think the biggest thing is like, how can you get out an authentic, like, fact-based message that's non-confrontational, where you're not trying to, like, you're just like saying, hey, this is the information, this is science-based information from, you know, as far back from the North American model of conservation when that first was implemented, and the numbers of wildlife before that was implemented, and to now, like, that was the greatest restoration conservation
ever
project ever. And there's so there's hard data behind that. And I think that that's where, you know, politics have got involved and ballot box biology or whatever you want to call it. And it's like, it shouldn't be a left or right thing at all. Like, it should be a science-based thing. And it should be about like, dude, I love wildlife. I like wolves. I like cats. Right. Like I want healthy ecosystems. Like, I don't want to, I'm not just like, be like, yeah, you should go kill all the mountain lions, all the bobcats, lynx, like get rid of them. No, like that's not what any of us want. Like, you want a healthy ecosystem that is managed properly. So, I mean, so the ungulates can thrive, so everything can thrive, so we can have good hunting opportunities. And it's like, I mean, I think the, correct me if I'm wrong, but like humans kind of like came in and messed everything up. And now, as far as like habitat loss and now we like, kind of don't have a choice but to like manage them.
Yeah, we're a part of it.
Like, is that an accurate kind of statement?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, so.
Do you know what really resonates with me in talking to people, you know, like yourself and, you know, the whole Prop 127 and then knowing like the Lionheart film, I don't know if you watched that.
I didn't watch that.
It's a good one.
I need to.
But knowing some of those individuals that were in that film, what really resonates with me, and I think probably resonates with a lot of people, is that like, your value, you value this thing, you value hunting, you value the animal, you value the opportunity to go out and pursue an animal and harvest it and kill it and eat it in a real genuine way. Like, I really feel that in my heart talking to you. And I hopefully that resonates for, you know, with me as well, because that's how I feel. Yeah. But that's what really resonates with me. I mean, you can hit me with facts and figures and logic and all that, but I really think that there's this human message that, that just this feeling, this is something that this person really genuinely values. It's a part of their identity and who they are and what they do and what they love. And I mean, I got that feeling from houndsmen. So houndsmen, I've known a fair number of houndsmen and that's probably one of my, I'll never own hounds. I'm not going to run lions. Probably I'm not going to train dogs, but just their way of life, like, you can tell that they feel it so deeply. Like, I want that for them.
Yeah.
Do you know? And I think it's not really, I don't know if it's not really tangible. It's not a fact or a figure or anything that you can put a statistic to, but it's this feeling, you know?
That's good.
I think do that. Keep doing that. And you do it well.
Ah, man.
And you know why? Because it's genuine.
Yeah. All I want to do is be a good steward.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, and just keep doing it.
That's awesome.
Do what I love to do and, try to do it well and have a good time doing it. Make good friends. And,
I'm glad you got into hunting.
Thanks, man. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm stoked. Like we said the whole time, you're very passionate about it. And it comes across and like you're well spoken about it.
Oh man. Thank you.
Yeah. I think you're really good for hunting.
I like talking to people like this. It's like Eric, I mean, we've had people in that are like different realms, you know, that are like kind of the top of whatever it is in their life that they do. And they, man, you guys just, your passion is intoxicating. Like you just want to do better at something, whatever it is that you want to pursue. You just want to do better and do better. So I appreciate you coming in today. And
yeah. Thank you for having
really,
me.
Really cool.
Shout out Omar. Like shout this is Omar. All,
yeah.
All
yeah.
Omar.
Yeah. Shout out Omar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is, appreciate him lining
yeah,
it up.
Yeah. He's the one who made it happen. So, dude, appreciate cool. you guys.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thank you.